Hey, and welcome to another episode of And Your Brain Turns to Mush, a TV podcast. Short news week this week. We're going to be talking about some confirmations in the Veronica Mars movie cast, and then we're going to talk about Game of Thrones Season 3 and the Game of Thrones finale. And expect a shorter episode this week because I think most of the big companies, you know, all the entertainment stuff for most papers were focused on E3, the video game conference, so I think that's where a lot of the attention went.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nobody, I don't think, really wanted to put out big news. It would kind of get lost in the shuffle of the PS4s and the $399 price range.
Xboxes and, you know, the things the kids are into these days.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm Graham.
I'm Josh.
And you should like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at BrainMushCast. Email us at yourbrainmush@yahoo.com. And you could download the Stitcher app and stream us for free on there. So, yeah. Josh, the Veronica Mars movie is coming together.
That's good. I sure hope so. They got enough money, didn't they?
Yeah, they were asking for $2 million. By the end, they had over $5 million.
Yeah, that's a fair bit of change, at least in my world.
It is still a very low budget movie, but it crossed the threshold of what they were looking for by quite a bit. So, it's about the budget of two or three Veronica Mars episodes. So, yeah, you know, that's pretty good. I think they could put together a movie with that, especially with the cast that, you know, wants to do it and probably isn't working for a top dollar.
It's awfully nice of them, you know.
So yeah, let's see. So confirmations. There's been a lot of confirmations this week of who's going to be in the movie. We already knew that Kristen Bell and Enrico Colantoni are going to reprise their roles as Veronica and Keith. Everyone else was kind of up in the air, but pretty soon after that, we had confirmation that Jason Doring would be on board playing Logan Eccles. And then this week, the news came out that Weevil will be in the movie, Wallace will be in the movie, Mac will be in the movie, which that was a big deal because she's had Tina Majorino. I cannot pronounce anybody's name ever. Terrible. Who played Mac. She's had, you know, a pretty great career and is always busy. So if there was anyone that I was like, they might not be able to get, I thought it would be her. But apparently she's on board. So that's awesome.
That was like Veronica Mars' sidekick, like nerdy sidekick, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember. Very easy. Mac, you know. Didn't she, you know, operate a Mac?
Yes, she did.
In the series?
Yep.
There you go.
That was apparently unintentional. When they wrote it, they did not realize
what?
That. Yep.
Come on.
And let's see. You got Piz will be back. That was the one that's... Everyone else was, you know, for every other cast member, it was like, yay! Yay! With Piz, it was kind of like... Some people were like... not outright booing, but going like, okay.
Meh. Hey. Give Piz a chance, man.
I actually like Piz. I don't like him that much as a love interest for Veronica. But as a friend for Wallace and as just a separate character, I thought he was fine.
He's the type of guy you could see yourself going bowling with.
There you go. Yeah, poor Piz. It's nobody likes Piz, and that makes me sad. And the weird thing that I was just talking to Josh about earlier is the fact that Ryan Hansen who played Dick Casablancas, he's done tons of stuff for the Kickstarter. He was in the initial Kickstarter video. He has agreed to, you know, help out record outgoing voicemails for the fans that paid enough money, all that kind of stuff. And yet he is not yet confirmed to be in the movie. So that's a little baffling because you'd think he'd be one of the first people on board, but apparently not.
What's your prediction? Why is that? A busy schedule?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think he will end up being in the movie. I think that maybe there's just a little bit of hankering going on over his contract.
My theory is just every time they come to him with a contract, there's just not a pen around. Like, that's probably what it is.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty good theory.
It's they've solid, approached right?
Him, they've approached him, like, six times, but every single time it's been in, like, a restaurant and, you know, asking for a pen at a restaurant would be rude, so they're just like, eh, later.
Damn it, not again. Yeah.
Oh, and I left off some people. Cliff, do you remember the lawyer Cliff?
Who, yes, I do.
He will be back.
Wasn't that the same lawyer that is in Arrested Development?
Was he in Arrested Development? I don't think so.
What does he look like? What actor is he? Do you know his name or no?
You know, I had his name, and then okay, Darren Norris.
Okay, I'm totally. Hey, just talk. I'm totally looking this up right now.
Yeah, Darren Norris is back as Cliff, and that's awesome. Nickelodeon enthusiasts may remember him from Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide.
He was the PE coach, right?
He was the janitor.
Janitor, dang.
Right,
I knew
yeah.
He was on staff somewhere.
Yep. And he's a really, really funny actor who never gets enough work, so that's awesome.
Hey, dude, I love Ned's Declassified, man. I was raised on Ned's Declassified.
Man, we are really showing our age.
Yeah, definitely.
Ned's Declassified.
That wasn't that long ago.
No, yeah, this is a little too recent. Nobody should be getting nostalgic yet for Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide.
Not at all.
And let's see, they got Madison Sinclair, the Neptune High's resident bitchy 09er, as well as spitting in your drink enthusiast. So that'll be fun. I can't wait to see where Madison Sinclair is 10 years later out of high school, because you know it's probably not going to be good.
Man, I wish I could remember these names. Like, I'm Google imaging each and every one of them, trying to refresh myself on these characters. It's just been so long now, you know?
Yeah. Madison Sinclair was the, she was an 09er girl that was mentioned more often than she actually appeared. But she was basically the face of the bitchy 09ers.
Okay.
And, you know, I think she has one of those kind of lives that peaks at graduation. So I think it'll be really interesting seeing where she is in comparison to Veronica, who I'm sure is doing something awesome. But yeah, that'll be fun. So Wallace is on board. That's good. Man, this is all Greek to people who haven't seen Veronica Mars. But okay. You should check it out.
Wallace is Veronica's cool man friend.
Yes.
Yeah. That isn't Logan.
Yeah. Not romantic man friend.
Yeah. Not romantic man friend. Just like a man that is a friend.
Pretty much. So, yeah, that's what's going on with the Veronica Mars movie. They're starting to shoot next week, which is exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing it finally. And I can't wait to point up at the screen and go, look, there's my $50.
Yeah. Hey, are you going to be in the credits or something, you know?
No, I wish. Should I demand that? Should I write an email being like, Rob Thomas, put me in your credits or I will pull my $50 out. I'll do it.
I will do it. And then the next day, there he is with the cast. Okay, listen, our investor is really putting pressure on us here.
Yeah. So yeah, obviously the movie made waves just for the fact of how it was being financed. Kickstarter, it's a huge Kickstarter movie project, hadn't really been seen before. And so now he's getting a lot of questions about the Party Down movie, if that could happen. He thinks that, well, they're still planning on doing a Party Down movie. But they're trying to do it through the traditional means first. And he was saying that he does consider Kickstarter an option. What is interesting, though, is that you know, Party Down... Well, I love Party Down, but it doesn't have as big of a fan base as Veronica Mars. Not at all. So I don't know if that could work as well. It was not nearly as seen as Veronica Mars. Never got any buzz when it was on the air.
I mean, does it still have a cult following out there?
Oh, it definitely does. Okay. But I feel like the term cult following is overused, because I feel like now I heard some, like the Today Show, refer to Game of Thrones as a cult show with a cult following.
Really? Okay, you know, no, that's using it in the wrong terms, definitely.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is the second most popular show ever on HBO now, behind The Sopranos.
Cult following implies that it is much smaller than Game of Thrones-sized following, yeah.
Yeah,
That's a religion, okay? Yes, Game of Thrones, that's a religious following. you know, these smaller shows, they're cults because they're smaller.
Exactly. Party Down has a cult following in the truest way, in that it's like old school cult following. It is small, but there are some passionate people, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Never, you know, don't doubt the abilities of what a very passionate person will do for their, you know, what they're passionate about.
Yeah, who knows?
Just a small group of people like that could end up igniting something. Who knows?
Maybe this small group of people are willing to pay a bigger chunk of change than your average Veronica Mars fan.
I wouldn't underestimate them.
Yeah. That's what's going on with the Veronica Mars movie. So yeah, not that much going on in the world of TV this week, like we said. So it's really... I think it's going to be tough coming up in terms of these next couple months that... You know, Game of Thrones is off the air. We still got a little while until...
This is going to be a rough time.
Yeah, I know. I guess we can go back to our old format. I've been waiting to bust out some more of the segments that we used to do. I miss those.
Yeah, remember those? You came up with some creative stuff. I'll give you props for that. We haven't visited those in a while because we haven't had to. So I guess it's back to arguing about what's better.
And trying to shoehorn Buffy into this podcast somehow. Yay! It's my favorite thing to do.
It's Graham's favorite pastime, it is.
So yeah, I guess we will have to talk about the end now. The end of Game of Thrones Season 3. Let's talk about the finale first. Full spoilers, everybody, for the finale of Game of Thrones and all TV seasons of Game of Thrones. I always forget to put spoiler tags in there, and sometimes I get yelled at, so I apologize.
Oh, really? They're abusing you? Bad people. Be nice to Graham.
People are mean on the internet.
Gosh, it is the internet, is it not?
Yep. So, Josh, Game of Thrones finale, what'd you think?
I thought it was awful, and it was awful because it ended. That was the worst part. Good. Great, even. I liked it a lot. What about you?
I actually prefer... I know last week got all the buzz because, like every season of Game of Thrones so far, it's been structured as the crazy stuff happens in the 9th episode and then the aftermath of what happened and the setup for the next season is what is really in the finale.
So this was the fallout episode, basically.
Yeah, but I actually preferred this episode to the Red Wedding episode last week. I just thought it was stronger all around. I mean, the Reigns of Castamere had the Red Wedding, but I felt like it had some other good stuff as well, but overall it wasn't as strong as this episode.
I have to completely agree with you there. I definitely felt that. Throughout this entire episode, I was loving each and every scene, where last week... You're right. That episode will always be remembered, obviously, because of the Red Wedding part of it. But the rest, I don't think will be as memorable. I don't know. It just doesn't stand out to me nearly as much as this episode did all around.
Yeah, the thing that this episode had that I think any episode that's lacking it is going to... Not going to be bad by any means, but isn't going to be one of my favorites is the Lannisters, the stuff going on in the South. That's kind of my favorite aspect of the show. And this episode, the finale, had some great scenes between the Lannisters and about, you know, what's going on in the South. And that's always been my favorite aspect of the show.
Joffrey with his big, huge grin, getting all giddy, and Tyrion going, you kill some puppies today?
Yeah, that was great. Tyrion not worried at all these days of threatening Joffrey and just being a general dick to Joffrey. Because, A, he knows that he's already ordered Tyrion to, you know, he's already ordered Tyrion's death before, so, you know, the animosity is there. And then also, he knows that Joffrey is not the biggest dog in the room anymore, because Tywin is a lot more powerful than Joffrey, and everyone but Joffrey knows it.
A crown does not give you power, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so we definitely saw a lot more, and I always love this. Any confrontation between Tywin and Joffrey is always great and always gets me on my edge of my seat, and that definitely happened again in this episode here, where we saw that good exchange that basically ended with Tywin sending Joffrey to bed.
Yeah, right? That was great, and actually I liked this more than their first scene together a couple weeks ago. I think it was almost like a month ago at this point. Of, you know, Joffrey, of him coming into the throne room. That was a good scene, but this really delivered in terms of, like, the hatred for each other was so thinly veiled at this point. It was just great.
Yes, yes, I'd have to agree. Where the first scene where we saw their conflict, they were a little more, they definitely hit it a lot better. In this scene, and I have to give props to the actor who plays Joffrey, because he plays a very, very good flustered person. Like, he was frustrated, and you could tell. But it was a frustration he couldn't do anything about. Not really, you know?
For once, right, yeah.
For once in his life, and it was, you could see it was driving his character crazy.
Yeah, he always does a classic taken aback face.
Yeah, taken aback where he's looking around. You know the one exact face I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
He's looking, like, down towards the ground, kind of, and, like, back and forth, and it's just a very, very good performance.
It really is. And the scene between Tywin and Tyrion, I think those are actually the best two actors on the show, in my opinion, are Peter Dinklage and Charles Dance as Tywin. And they just, oh man, any scene where they're together, it just... They're well-written scenes, don't get me wrong, but those actors can elevate any material, and so any scene with them is great. I love Tywin saying that the most selfless thing that he'd done for the family is letting Tyrion live. That was a brutal scene for Tyrion, and yeah, it was just a great scene to watch.
Yeah, we got a lot of... This season, we got a lot of Tywin beating up on Tyrion. Well, it's funny because when we first started the show, we actually saw Tywin recognizing Tyrion, you know, that he actually has somewhat of a mind for strategy, at least, and isn't a dim-witted fool or whatever, or a stunted fool, as he called him. But that's totally, I don't know. And he might still recognize Tyrion as one of the smarter Lannisters out there, but... he definitely puts him in his place and doesn't hide the fact that he really actually despises him at the root of it, you know?
Yeah, I think the thing with... I think that Tywin had not high hopes for Tyrion, but thought for a little bit, hey, maybe, you know, he could make something of himself. And then we saw what happened in season two. And I think he now considers, you know... Tyrion's reign as Hand of the King as a disappointing one, because he was not able to keep Joffrey in line that well, and because of, you know, Cersei's trickery in making Tyrion's role in the Battle of Blackwater not seem that important. I just think Tywin has a personal distaste for Tyrion and his whole attitude. I think that's part of it as well. But I think really Tywin thinks that he gave Tyrion a chance to step up to the plate, and Tyrion could not deliver in from Tywin's point of view.
Yeah, which I guess actually speaks less about Tywin more than anyone else, that he can't see past the lies and deception that Cersei is kind of like woven over, you know, what Tyrion has done, and actually gets to the truth of it, because, you know, he's all about legacy and protecting the family name, and Tyrion would actually be a very good ally in that if he wouldn't treat him so much like dirt.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting relationship between those two, because I feel like if Tyrion was, you know, was not a midget, that he might be like his favorite son.
Yeah.
Because he is definitely, if he was, you know, big and tall and strong like Jaime was, I think he has a better strategic mind than Jaime. But who knows, if Tyrion didn't have that problem in his life, then he wouldn't be Tyrion. He would probably be a lot more like every other Lannister.
That's true too, you know? So it definitely shapes these characters and their relationship with each other, makes for a great show. And specifically the Lannisters, can we agree that pretty much any Lannister interacting with another Lannister makes for great television?
Yeah, the Lannisters are by far my favorite family on the show.
Which is so odd to say.
Yes, they're horrible people by and large, but they are the most interesting and the most three-dimensional. Don't get me wrong, I love the Starks that are still alive. Bran, Jon Snow. I love the female Starks that are still alive.
I think we like the idea of the Starks.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's some, like, Arya is a great character. She had some great scenes in this finale. Sansa is, while she's not as exciting of a character as Arya, I think she is a pretty interesting character. And I'm never bored by Sansa, you know, by her storyline.
Yes, I agree. Because she's interacting with the Lannisters so often.
That might be part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
If Sansa was off running around with Bran and the Disney Channel twins, I don't know if I would find it nearly as engaging.
Agreed.
The stuff going on in the South was probably my favorite stuff in this episode. Although there was lots of good stuff. We had Sam and Gilly arriving at the wall, and then we finally got to see, you know, what had been happening at the wall, and it looks like there's a bigger force that is left there than I had assumed. I kind of thought Castle Black was pretty much empty.
Yeah, I thought, because when the Lord Commander said, "We're all going," I took his word for it. I thought, okay, they're all going across past the wall, but no. I guess those are all the stewards and, you know, non-fighters that stayed, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, good deal for them. That's
yeah, I'd say
be a far better position than in a uprising on a, you know, what's his name? I'm totally forgetting his name. The Daughter Touchers.
Crester?
Yeah, they missed the whole mutiny.
Yes, the whole mutiny, which I haven't even thought about since that episode. Like, where are those mutineers? When are we going to see those guys again? Or are we?
I'm not sure if they'll really play into it, because our point of view is that, the point of view I think that we're supposed to be at now from any of those characters is just Sam and Gilly. Maybe they'll turn up in their story, but I don't think they're really all that important anymore.
The only way I see the mutineers coming back is for Sam, right? Because, and I forget the guy's name, but the one that always calls Sam Miss Piggy said, "You better keep running, because I'm coming for you," you know? So
he calls him Miss Piggy?
Yeah, I think
he's
so,
making, right? Muppet references?
I guess. I don't know. Did they have Muppets?
I think Jim Henson is really popular over on the wall.
Maybe Sam was the first Muppet.
So, But I think the best thing going on up north, I mean, it was cool seeing Bran and Sam and, you know, those two teams meet. It's always exciting when two people who, you know, two groups who you never see interact get to interact. That's always
yes,
fun.
Yes, definitely.
Now, Daenerys and, you know, the characters that we know, that would be more exciting, but it was a good scene.
It was good all in all. We got some good, another good Hodor moment.
Yep.
which I always laugh, like, and it's so dumb but funny. I don't know. Yes. I can't help myself.
Hodor is great. He's the best character in that group, in the little you know, in Bran's group.
He's the most lovable character there by far. Yeah.
But the best scene we had up north was Ygritte and Jon scene of you know, one final you know nothing Jon Snow moment.
Finn Jon Snow.
It was brutal and really well played by the woman who plays Ygritte. I thought she just hit that scene out of the park. I don't know if she's considered a regular or a guest star, but if she is a guest star, that should definitely be her Emmy submission episode, because it was just some really spectacular acting right there, I thought.
Well, like you were saying, I was hoping that Ygritte would actually kill Jon Snow in that moment, and then we would start following Ygritte instead of Jon Snow, because I actually like that character more. And as bad as it sounds, and I know there's why, I don't know, but there's Jon Snow fans out there, and I was cheering him on. I was cheering Ygritte on to kill Jon Snow. I let out a little cheer. I'm sorry, but I did when she started shooting him with arrows.
You know, it was tough for Ygritte, so it was tough to watch. But you're right. I was more on Ygritte's side in this, in that first of all, abandoning her was a real dick move in the first place. But secondly, yeah, she's just a more interesting character. But I knew that, you know, shooting this man that she loved was tough. So it wasn't like a happy, like, oh, Jon Snow is getting shot fun scene.
Only for me.
Yeah. But, yeah, I remember watching it with some people, and the first thing I said when she pulled out the bow was, oh, shoot him!
Because yes, I know. I was like, come on, you can do it. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. And, you know, what did he say? What he said wasn't even that nice. It was like, I need to go home. He said for a brief minute, I love you, but I know. And he said it. I know you're not going to shoot me.
Yeah. And she did three times. She
totally did. So Jon Snow really doesn't know anything.
And, you know, I think Ygritte could have, you know, shot him in the back of the head or the face if she'd wanted to. She's a pretty good shot. But I think the fact that she was, I don't know, you shoot anybody with an arrow three times, there's a pretty good chance they're gonna die.
Does that mean they're broken up now?
I think so. That's how most of my relationships end. Yeah, so
that's the Game of Thrones equivalent to, yes, I'm sorry, but it's time for us to see other people.
Yep. So yeah, that's not that doesn't look like that's going to go too well, but maybe she can, you know, travel down south and hang out with Tyrion, and then that would just be the best thing ever, instead of Jon Snow. But that probably won't happen.
Can Ygritte take Shay's place?
Yeah, that would be okay. That would
Which,
be okay.
Which, by
me.
The way, I was so upset and frustrated with that character when, you know, the spider came up to her and explained the situation and basically said, like, you are not good for Tyrion. You know, even though you guys love each other, you're not good for him. Here's a bunch of diamonds. Go live and be rich. And, you know, what he was saying, although brutal, was really true.
Well, and what I didn't like about that scene, well, what I didn't like about Shay in that scene was that when Varys was presenting that offer, I never once assumed that Tyrion had told him to make this offer. It didn't even cross my mind. And that's what she jumped to straight away. It's like, you know, aren't you Tyrion better than this, right? Why if he really was going to tell you to leave, he would do it himself. Tyrion's not the kind of person that would, you know, use varies of all people to deliver that message.
Thank you so much for bringing up that point, because that wraps up Shay for me as a character. She just doesn't understand the gravity of certain situations, and she's not a very perceptive character at all because of it, you know? She's all upset and angry at Tyrion, you know, for marrying Sansa, to the point to where I haven't seen one, like, at least close to humane scene between them two, where they're at least treating each other, well, at least she's treating him with somewhat, you know, respect or whatever, or I don't see any love there anymore. I just see hate and resentment, and it makes me upset.
Yeah, you know, to be fair, Tyrion, it would be tough to be her, and, you know, following that scene where Sansa and Tyrion were walking around in the garden, it was a cute scene between them two, and showed that, hey, you know, this relationship is progressing, and maybe Sansa is realizing it's not so bad to be married to this specific Lannister, which, you know, that's all undone by finding out the events of the Red Wedding. But, you know, yeah, it's a cute scene. But in the background, you could understand from Shay's point of view why this would, you know, that would be brutal. Because she just has to follow them around, and it would be a very terrible, awkward position to be in.
I will say she did say a redeeming thing, something that I actually liked in this episode, and that was that despite all of this, and this is what makes Shay an actual good character, you know, because I do believe she's a good person, is that, you know, she'd be quote-unquote willing to lay down her life for Sansa, you know? Like, she really likes that girl. She just despises the situation that has come about because of her.
Right. She's not a female country music artist. She hates... She's mad at Tyrion, not the woman who took him away.
Exactly. Precisely.
But yeah, so let's talk about Sansa in this episode. Oh man, we've jumped way off course from Ygritte and the stuff up north. Let's wrap that up. Do you think Jon Snow is going to be alive next season?
I think he will be, and the only reason I think that is if they were going to kill him off, I would think that they would have done it in that moment there.
Right, it would be kind of weird. They could get the maximum emotional moment from his death, from him being shot in that moment, not, you know, dying with Pip and the boys down at Castle Rock.
Exactly. It would, like, make sense to cash that in there. But they didn't. So he will live.
Yeah, that's what I think as well. So Sansa got some bad news this week. Wasn't in the episode much, but I thought that she made her presence felt really well this episode, just that scene where Tyrion goes in and Sansa's obviously found out about the Red Wedding, and they just look at each other, and Tyrion knows there's really not much he can say to fix this, and just leaves. I thought that was a really great scene between them.
It was very good, because for a split moment I think, okay, what can Tyrion say to comfort her in this terrible, terrible, god-awful moment? Like, her house is pretty much done for, you know, through her eyes.
And because of his family, so...
It's like, what could he say? Nothing at all. So, yes, he walked away, which was totally appropriate in that situation.
Yep. Yeah, I thought that was really great. And just going back to that small council scene, man, just... There is nothing better than the small council scenes. I love. I could watch a whole season of just small council meetings. Let's
make a show called The Small Council.
Yes,
that's that would going be to be fantastic. The Game of Thrones spinoff. Yeah.
Oh, that would be so.
That
great.
Sounds like a sitcom. I don't know. It sounds like.
Oh, it will be a sitcom. It'll have laugh track and everything. And,
yes.
And the maester will be the old man who reacts to everything, and Varys will be the wacky eunuch neighbor.
Yes.
So let's see. There has to be other stuff going on. I know there was. Oh yeah, the Hound and Arya. So Arya is going to have some problems, I think, mentally when she grows up. I think she's going to have some psychiatrist bills.
I think that time has passed. Like, she's passed the point of no return and, wow, killed her first man, as she said. Yes. Right.
She had killed the stable boy before in season one, but that was out of sheer, like, need. Like, there was nothing she could do in that position if she wanted to live but kill the stable boy. This was different, though. This was premeditated, full-on, I'm going to go up to that guy and stab him a bunch of times.
Yes, this wasn't only, like, an act of murder, but this was scheming, and the way she went about it was just so genius.
Well, it wouldn't have been so genius if the Hound hadn't jumped in at the right time. Because
I think that's kind of what made it genius, too, is because she knew that the Hound was going to go slice those guys in two the moment they drew swords on her.
Yeah.
So all she needed to do was get the first guy. And then I love what the Hound had to say about it, is next time you're going to do something like that, at least warn me first. So he wasn't even mad that he killed those guys, obviously. I mean, you got to get the feeling that the Hound actually likes this girl.
Yeah, I think so. I think he admires her, you know, spunk or whatever. And I think that he, now that he's seen what, I think he used to see her as, you know, a prissy nobleman, someone that he hates, because the Hound is in that world. But I think because of his face and his background, I think he has a lot of animosity towards it. Now that Arya has had everything stripped away from her, I think that he has a lot more like empathy towards her.
Sure, and that's a great point, because he's kind of a renegade. Although he's House Clegane, which is actual, like, a recognizable house in the universe, you know, he made the point that he never wanted to be a knight or anything like that, for the very reason that his brother was a knight. He thinks if a guy like that can be a knight, then it's not really as noble as everyone makes it out to be. And so he's kind of an outsider in this, in the, you know, houses, just as Arya is now. And I think he respects her too, because what we always get from the Hound is he's a killer, right? He always says that, I'm a killer.
Right.
And the world is ruled by killers. And here's Arya, who, what we can see plain as day in this scene, is definitely a killer herself.
Yeah, and man, I think now that things between Brienne and Jaime, who we'll get to in a minute, aren't as, like, you know, they're not buddies on the road anymore. Now that mantle has kind of been taken up for by Arya and the Hound, now they're wacky road buddies.
Yes. Yes. I didn't think of it that way. Yes, wacky road buddies. That's what I'll think of when I see them.
Yep. Killing people, having deep conversations, threatening to kill each other. Wacky road buddies.
Fala Mangules. I love that. That was a great close to that scene, by the way. Every man must die or something like that, right? Or every... What does that mean?
Yeah, I think that's what it means. Was that her calling on, you know, the shapeshifter assassin from last season?
Yeah, so that's the phrase she has to say if she gives the coin to somebody from... Oh, man, what's the name of that place? That island. I can't remember the name of it.
But yeah, me neither.
Yes, that was like a callback to him. That's
but where she, I know she said she was supposed to say this phrase. I don't remember. Was it that phrase specifically?
It was that phrase specifically, but she had to give somebody a coin and say that. Like an actual person that is from...
from that island, right.
From that island. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I wonder if she's going, if we're going to pick up and she's going to be in a assassin school.
That's what I want to see more than
that. Would be pretty awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, and it turns out something that I thought was kind of interesting, that they decided to draw a comparison between Arya and Tyrion, and that they both keep lists and repeat lists of people that they want to kill.
or at least want to get payback on.
Yeah.
Arya definitely wants to kill. Tyrion, he said not kill, but get back at them, yeah.
Well, that's... I'm thinking, you know, Arya and Tyrion are both pretty cool. Should I start doing this too? Should everybody just start keeping lists of people they need to get back at?
The cool kids are doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
I just wrote Jay Leno on this notepad.
Nice. Yes, if you're a very hateful and resentful person that likes to hold grudges, sure, keep a list and say it like a prayer every night before you go to bed.
That would be a little creepy. I think I'll hold off on that. But yeah, so that was some really good stuff. I'm really interested into where Arya goes next season, because again, we only saw the first half. This season is the first half of a book. Everything is still kind of ramping up, and it still kind of feels that way. And that was one of my problems with this season as a whole, is it didn't really feel like a complete story. It felt a lot of the season was just ramping up for things that are going to happen next season.
Sure, and we can do that by tracing like some of the characters and what journey they have made this season. For example, let's think of what all has occurred to Daenerys in this whole season.
She's got some slaves, and then she got some more slaves.
She got slaves, got more slaves. It's like, you know, whatever they were doing at the start of the season is pretty much what they were doing at the end of the season, with the exception of, well, the guests at the Red Wedding.
Yeah. Oh, man, the little detail of them sewing Rob's direwolf's head onto his body. That was that was some messed up stuff.
Wow, what a great opener to the episode.
Yeah. That George R. R. Martin is a messed up guy.
He's one sick old man, isn't he?
He is, because yeah, that was brutal. Never would have crossed my mind. I mean, I figured there would be some scene somewhere where it would be, you know, Game of Thrones is pretty brutal, but I was not expecting that.
I was expecting a head on a spike. That's exactly what I was expecting, and I got more than that. It's good, you know.
And, yeah, I wonder if it doesn't look like Joffrey's going to be able to go ahead with his plans for serving Rob's head to Sansa.
No, they snuffed that out pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're just like, okay, Joffrey, can you not be a cartoon villain today?
Yes, please? Please not be such a freaking weirdo and just cool it. Cool your jets, man. Just.
And, let's see, so Theon was... story is probably the most criticized this season from
really? You know,
critics and stuff. Yeah, because, let's see, what was Theon's arc this season?
This was another perfect case of what he was doing at the start of the season is what he's doing at the end of the season. We started with him getting tortured. We ended with him getting tortured.
Yeah, and I think you could really cite that as a weakness of this season as a whole, is the lack of progress that they made on some of these fronts. Whereas, yeah, Theon, I got tired of seeing him tortured every week, every other week or whatever. That was brutal. It was not fun to watch.
It's like, what do they have cooked up for him this time? And you're like cringing.
Yeah, but at least with the castration and then his sister, you know, mounting a badass action force to go get him. At least now it feels like it's moving forward, and also because it wasn't like the first couple episodes where it's like, you know, they cut off his finger or, you know, this will like change Theon permanently, change his outlook, change his character, and I think he's going to be a different person from this point out if he lives through this and if his sister's successful in rescuing him. So at least there's that.
Yes, I would say the strongest Theon episodes was the one where he finally escaped, right? Only to get pulled back in. And then this one here, because we got that sense of moving forward, and because I actually liked the scene where, with Theon getting tortured, at least in this episode, with the whole pork sausage thing going on and stuff like
that.
Oh man,
that was
like,
messed up.
That was so messed up. But what made for a better scene was when, a part of Theon was shipped back to the Greyjoys, and basically we found out that if it's at all possible, his douchey dad is even more of a douche than we previously thought
was possible. Yeah, and his sister is tough, but, you know, she's still a decent human being.
She's got some shred of honor in her, and, like, that scene where she was talking about sailing out with the boats and stuff, I'm, like, actually cheering her on. I'm like, okay, finally, like, a glint of hope in this dark world, like somebody's doing something nice.
Right. And we find out that that Ramsay is the son of Roose Bolton, so that sounds like a fun family.
Yeah, definitely.
Good, I saw someone on Twitter said that that Cersei and Roose Bolton should trade parenting tips.
Yes. Wow. Could you imagine having them as a mom and dad? What kind of twisted creature would they make together? A cross between Joffrey and the Bolton bastard.
Yeah, that would be a... Ugh.
Those two need to get together and, like, they'd be great friends. Very fast friends. They like all the same things, you know, torture and pain and suffering.
But yeah, I feel like Joffrey could really find his soulmate in Ramsay.
They can both, you know, peel the skin off of their victims and giggle in bliss for all eternity. Yeah.
But yeah, if Cersei and Roose Bolton had a baby, it would just be Hitler.
It would be baby Hitler.
Yep. But yeah, so that, you know, that story has been something that I'm glad it's moving forward. It wasn't my favorite, but it did provide some good moments. And the actor who plays Ramsay is a good actor, and seeing him get to go big was fun. But overall, that was probably my least favorite storyline of the season. One of the biggest things that happened that we haven't talked about yet is Davos saving Gendry from getting sacrificed by the Red Priestess and then getting sentenced to death.
Davos, one of the few just all-around good characters in this show, like morally good, I mean.
Yeah.
Just all, you can't help but like the guy.
It's impossible not to.
Yeah, he always does what he thinks is right. I think his only flaw being is that he still, to this day, and I guess this is how loyal this guy is, he believes there's still hope for Stannis and that he is a just ruler, even though at this point I would have thrown in the towel personally. I would have been like, okay, the guy I'm following now isn't the guy I used to know.
Yeah. Yeah, he has Ned Stark's strengths and weaknesses in some ways.
Yes, yes.
In that he is a really good person, but in this world, that's almost a fault.
Yes, he's loyal to a fault, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, he seems smarter than Ned. You know, he used to be a smuggler. He's got a little bit more of a rogue edge than Ned ever did.
Yes, I'd agree on that, and he's self-aware, too, of the fact. He even said himself, I'll never learn.
Yeah. Right?
That was a good moment of self-awareness for him.
And, you know, he just seems a little more chill than Ned. He seems like a guy you'd want to grab a beer with. Ned would yell at you for you know, wanting to drink on an important night or something. Whereas Davos would be a fun drinking buddy, I feel like.
Drinking and bowling with the Onion Knight and Piz. That'd be a fun night. Very laid back, chilled, fun night.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's an interesting image, but I think they would probably get along fine, Piz and the Onion Knight.
They would. That's it. There you go. Fan fiction writers, get on that.
Oh, and going back to that point you made about the problem of the season being that people are ending exactly where they started. The White Walkers are ending exactly where they started. The end of season two is, oh no, the White Walkers are coming. And the end of this season was, oh no, the White Walkers are coming.
Yes. Like, it's so funny you mentioned that too, because at the end of that season, I wasn't only thinking they were coming, like, I thought they were here. I thought this season we were going to see the White Walkers, like, dish out some serious pain on the Southerners, you know?
Right, no. And instead we saw one get killed by a fat guy, and that was about it.
That was it. Yeah, so I just gotta say, I am not afraid of these White Walkers, and I'm sure one day they'll finally come and it'll be terrible, but for now, whatever, man. They apparently don't get around very fast. They're very slow walkers.
Yeah. Yeah, they should all get a... Wasn't that one riding on a zombie horse? Where'd they get the zombie horse? They should find more zombie horses.
They need to get more zombie horses. If I was their strategist, I'd let them know that. But hey, they're called White Walkers, right? Not the White Runners. So they should, I guess, take a while to get from place to place.
Yeah, and you know what? I thought it was interesting how the Red Priestess switched on a dime from being so focused on getting Stannis on the throne to just... She thought about it for, like, 30-second tops and then went, you know what? That doesn't matter at all. The White Walkers are where we need to focus our attention.
Totally.
I was like, oh, okay.
Her 180 at least was somewhat believable in that she's more attuned to the magic side of Westeros, I think.
Yeah.
Stannis, I guess, is just... He's got to be totally and completely in her pocket by now because he follows her every order. The moment she made her 180, he didn't question it for a minute, which is not the Stannis we would have seen last season. This Stannis is like a brainwashed zombie. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. And it's weird because at the, you know, things were going pretty good for them at one point last season. This season, and I know she pinned it on Davos, but things haven't been going all that well for, you know, the Stannis Club over there. So it's interesting that he's still so invested in, like, whatever she says and just takes it all.
They are going to have some explaining to do because it's got to be some sort of magical influence. That's the only thing I'll accept at this point because Stannis, as a character we were introduced to him, he's a very headstrong, very independent type of guy. He seemed like the type of guy you wouldn't want to cross and was very much... at least a military leader type. He knew what he wanted. I don't get that anymore at all from him. He's whipped in my eyes.
You know, I never really got that from him, to be honest. I feel like Stannis is a character who is suffering from... I know there's shows that do this, especially early on in the pilots, and especially with procedurals, where they talk up a character. Other characters go... Oh, this character is so smart. He's the smartest guy around, best cop on the unit, whatever. And then that becomes their reputation, but it's not from their actions. It's from what we've heard about them. Like Davos can say, Stannis is a good man and could be a wise leader and is a good military, blah, blah, blah. But we haven't seen that from him. I've seen Stannis as a douche since day one, and not like a good at ruling douche. Like, he hasn't made that many good decisions. He doesn't seem particularly smart. He just seems like a guy with a cool voice and, you know, who seems very serious. I haven't got, like, yeah, he's got a military mind or any compassion that would be good for leadership or anything like that.
Yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. I've never seen, and I don't know what the Onion Knight, you know, sees in him as far as a good leader. I do, though, I will say this. I do see him as the type of guy that really, he knows what he wants. And like I said before, this is the guy that was previously, like, going to kill, right? He was choking the Red Priestess. He was so upset at her. He was always very reserved about following her and the Fire God. But ever since that moment, he looked into the fire. And this is speculation and really my theory, is that from the moment Stannis looked into the fire, you know, the Red Priestess had him look in, he's been on board with her 100%. And I don't think it's so much as Stannis saw something in the fire. I think she literally controls him now through some sort of magical influence. That's my theory anyway.
I could see that. That would be a lot of magic for Game of Thrones, but who knows? There's been random bursts of magic that surprised me in the past.
It's the story now, right? Like, as R.R. Martin has said, the story is magic is returning to Westeros. Like, that's part of what the universe is going on in the universe at this time. So, I don't know. That's theory anyway. I could be totally wrong. I'd accept that.
Right. So, let's wrap up a couple things about this episode. Matt, you can see how big this episode was. It was extra 10 minutes, and they really packed that 10 minutes to the brim. It did not feel... this episode really didn't feel like, you know, like, oh, this is going on too long, or... This episode felt shorter than some of the half-hour Arrested Development Season 4 episodes. So, Jaime Lannister finally back in King's Landing, and first thing that happens when he gets back is he's taken down a peg and reminded that, hey, he doesn't have a hand now, and people just assume he's some, you know, farmer nobody.
Some bumpkin, yeah.
Yeah.
A country boy is what he called him. Yeah, I don't really have much to say about Jaime right now. There wasn't any aha moments, nothing that really stood out except for that, I guess. And
I thought the scene where he saw Cersei again for the first time.
Yes, he saw Cersei, but then that was it. Scene cut off, so we got literally nothing. That was, as far as I'm concerned, that was a teaser for next season.
Yeah, but I do want to say that the acting in that scene was really good, because Lena Headey and Jaime Lannister, whose name is unpronounceable, Nikolai
Nikolai Kraskowski or something like that.
Yeah, they did a good job in that episode, because I really felt like you could tell Cersei was so happy to see him, but at the same time, it's like, oh God, you don't have a hand, and she played both those things in that moment, and I thought that was really, really well done.
Okay, so you caught that. I didn't know if she had saw the fact that he doesn't have a hand anymore.
Yeah, he was holding it up right there, and you could definitely see that on her face. I watched that scene a couple times, so I actually rewound it.
Yeah, because the scene did happen pretty quickly, so I guess that's why I wouldn't have caught that. But
so the final thing, what did you think about ending the season on this particular Daenerys scene?
It did not rub me the right way.
How so?
I felt like, obviously, you know, every Game of Thrones season, we know this, right? It ends with Daenerys. It's what we predicted. And coming up on the scene, I knew this was going to be the last bit of Game of Thrones I was going to get for 8 months. And what happened? Do you remember what happened at the end of last season with Daenerys?
Like
the last scene before she went off.
I think, didn't last season end with the White Walkers, though? Yeah, that was the last shot of last season.
Oh, really? That was the last shot? Okay, yeah. So I'm totally wrong. I thought it was Daenerys' dragons flying off when they were walking out of Karth.
No, that was it this season, actually. That was, not out of Karth. I was thinking of when they got the Unsullied. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I don't know. This scene was... I don't know, it just felt kind of off in that it didn't leave me in the epic climactic ending I wanted. It was extremely predictable, and I guess it was supposed to be, you know, she's the liberator, right? She's liberating the slaves. But it was very odd the way they did it, and this might be me, let me know your opinion too, but it was just the reactions of the slaves, it just felt a little off. Am I alone in that?
No, I see where you're coming from. I think the thing that I said when I was watching the scene is, oh, the slaves are all like those little squeaky toy aliens in Toy Story that Buzz Lightyear saves.
Ooh, yeah, the clone.
Yeah, the ones that are just like, say they're going to serve Buzz Lightyear forever because he did this one good thing for them. I'd like to see, when it comes back next season, a little more nuance to, you know, not everybody thinks the same way, and that was a big group of people. Maybe some of these slaves aren't so down with her plan. Maybe, you know...
Yes, I see what you're saying, too, and I think that was kind of the misdirection that I got from the scene, and maybe part of what rubbed me the wrong way, is she said the statement, and the line was a very cool line, you know, people learn to love their chains. And yeah. I thought for a second, okay, wait. So maybe these people didn't want to be liberated and we're going to see something interesting. But that didn't happen. And maybe I was, like, kind of let down in that moment. I don't know.
Yeah, and it was rough because it's like... I don't know. It was a gorgeously shot scene. So I understand why they wanted to end on this image. But, you know, guess what? We already had an episode this season and a sequence that was better than this one of Daenerys freeing some slaves, looking awesome, and then the dragons flying away, and that being the end of the episode.
Yes, yes. So, and that's the exact comparison I was drawing in my mind at the time, too, now that you're saying it, is that it was a moment of deja vu, like I had seen this before, but in this case wasn't as epic.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So yeah, that it wasn't the most interesting thing to end on.
Right, not to say it was bad or anything, but it wasn't Game of Thrones great.
And you know what, some people on Twitter, it wasn't racist, come on.
Racist?
Racist because Daenerys is white and everybody
okay, so she's the white messiah. I hate it when people draw this. God.
And well, okay, first of all, there was some white people in that crowd. There was. Go back and watch it. There was. And also it's a fantasy world, and do we have to draw whatever. There is no direct correlation between, you know, I don't know.
When you watch those things, you have to ask yourself, okay, if you're going to get upset about that, say they were, just for the sake of argument, let's say they were all black, right? Was R.R. Martin or was, you know, HBO trying to make a statement in that moment at all? No, just please watch it for what it is and like it, you know?
Or not like it, but just not based on things that really... I don't think this was George R. R. Martin or the producers of Game of Thrones or HBO trying to make some racial statement. It was a plot point.
Exactly. Please realize that and keep your tweets to yourself.
I don't know. I didn't really understand that controversy because, again, it's all null and void when there was people of different... races in that were being freed. So yeah, especially when you consider that argument just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, not at all.
So yeah, let's talk about the season overall. First of all, what grade would you give this finale?
I guess I'll grade it as compared to other Game of Thrones finales. And although it was solid all around, the note at the end was not the note I was looking for, and that will dock it down a bit. I'm going to give this finale, as compared with the other Game of Thrones finales, a B+.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and give it an A-. I would say overall it was one of my favorite episodes of the season. It had some stuff that wasn't perfect, but I still enjoyed the finale a ton.
Sure, you'll forgive the fact that they didn't stick the landing.
Yeah. It was just that last scene, and I understand that last scene in context of the story was a perfectly good story beat. It just wasn't a particularly interesting one to end on. So... how about this season overall? What would you give this season, and where do you think it falls in comparison to other Game of Thrones seasons?
This is always going to be tough because I like this show so much. But I will have to say that this season, with compared to the other seasons, will be... I even hate to use these words together. My quote-unquote least favorite of the three so far, which is really hard to say, but... I don't know. Like you said, like the fact that they weren't moving storylines forward and stuff like that, like I really felt it. And for me personally, in my television watching, I love the fact that the overall arc is what I like to see move forward. And I didn't get much of that. So it'll definitely be rated so far as my quote unquote least favorite of the seasons. But it was great. It was still great and had some memorable moments that I'll never forget.
Okay, so what grade do you think you would give it overall?
Overall, with compared to the other seasons, is that what we're doing?
I mean, I guess. Just
as a...
grade.
just as a compared to other amazing dramas on television right now.
Sure, whatever you want. Just
I'll give it an A minus.
An A minus? Okay. Let's see. I would actually say I liked this one better than season one. I like season two a little bit more. It's weird that I think we seem to be in the minority on this, and that people, this seems to be people's favorite season overall. But I would say season one, the first six episodes of season one had so much exposition, so many things to build, that as individual pieces of television, I don't think that they are really that spectacular. They're great at building this world, but they really didn't move stuff ahead at all, like what you were saying about this season. I think this season did more of that. Now, the back half of season one was great, but I still, you know, those six episodes that weren't all that interesting to me, I still have to kind of hold that against the show.
Sure.
So I would say that this I like season two more than this season, but I liked this season more than season one. But I would have to give it a B+ this season overall, just because so many things remain stagnant. And I understand, like, they were adapting half of a book. So you wouldn't expect, when you're halfway into a book, that everything would be resolved. So it's understandable how they have reached this point of this season hasn't resolved a lot of things because, like I said, if you haven't gotten to the last page of the book, you're not expecting things to be resolved yet. So I think that a lot of our problems will be maybe not forgiven, but it'll be a lot very understandable next season of, you know, why things had to play out like this. And it was still a very, very good season of TV. I enjoyed it a lot. I don't think that, because of some of the narrative problems, I don't think that it's up there, or at least on the same, quite the same level as, you know, the TV greats of The Wire or Breaking Bad. But it's a really, really, really great show, and I enjoy it a lot. But yeah, I really hope that it really kicks itself into high gear next season. This was an enjoyable season. I just want to see a little bit more narrative forcefulness going forward.
All right, there you have it.
So yeah, I think that about does it for this episode. Come back next week when we'll talk about whatever news does or doesn't happen. And we're going to find a new episode spotlight, maybe check in on some shows that we talked about before Game of Thrones came back in, check in on those, or maybe just something new. You know, it'll be a potluck. Who knows what will happen? But tune in for it. So, yep. Have a good one, everybody. And I will see you next week.